No one cares more about wildlife than hunters. No one contributes more funding to the management and conservation of wildlife than hunters. Whether it be predator or prey, wildlife needs to be managed and controlled. And there is no more effective management tool than hunting. We don't just kill to kill. We don't just hunt to hunt. We hunt and we kill to ensure that there is wildlife for all who love wildlife for generations to come. Well, welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast. That quote in the opening was from one of our guests this evening, Corey Jacobson, someone that you're probably familiar with. Corey joins us again on the show tonight, as well as Tyler Crockett and co-host Steve Speck, and we discuss a controversial topic, wolf hunting. Corey and Tyler recently went on a wolf hunt in Idaho. We hear about their hunt, but more importantly, we discuss the issue of wolf hunting itself. Why is it so debated? What role do hunters have to play? I know that there's many thoughts and opinions on this topic, and honestly, it isn't something that I know a ton about, so I was learning right along with you guys in this show. I think it's a great conversation to have, hopefully some helpful perspective, and we're going to dive right into it right now. Corey, Tyler, welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast. I think welcome back for each of you. I'm sure that hopefully our listeners have caught previous episodes, but tonight's a whole new night. Glad to have you guys back.
Thanks for having us. We're excited.
Yeah, hey guys.
It's kind of fun. Tyler and I are sharing an office and we're like 10 feet apart, but he's in another room and I'm sitting here looking at him on video. So it's kind of cool.
I noticed when you stepped away a second ago to grab a bottle of water that you suddenly appeared on Tyler's video screen.
That's funny.
It's like the, you know, the couples that sit in the living room and text each other from couch to couch.
We didn't record that because we couldn't get any work done otherwise, so we had to separate ourselves physically.
It's amazing what an old drywall can do.
Like, we literally shared an office, and Corey and I'd get in here, and we'd just start BSing for like 2 hours, like, dude, we should get something done.
But then we realized, you know, it was wolf season or it was shed hunting season or some season, and it led to a very unproductive office environment.
Yeah. Well, let's try to be productive on this one, at least as best as we can. Man, I'm so excited to talk to you guys about the hunt that I got to watch unfold from afar, and I'm sure several of our listeners did if they were following you guys on social, but wanted to talk just a bit about the wolf hunt that you guys have been on that was kind of going on over the course of a couple weeks, and really not just the hunt itself, but kind of the whole issue. It's so hotly debated, and I thought that you guys did a really good job kind of opening up that discussion in a good way without just, you know, throwing bombs and being incredibly divisive, but, you know, bringing some good perspective to it. So I'm just kind of curious first, we'll just start with you, Corey, with your perspective. How have you seen wolves change kind of the hunting landscape, the wildlife landscape in Idaho? Because you've, you know, been out there for, you know, a couple decades and really have seen the change. I'm just curious what your personal experience is with that.
For sure. No, and it makes me sound like I'm old when you say I've been out here for a couple decades. Could have said several years and not aged me there, but no, it has. You know, the thing we've done is we've hunted the same area for elk since 1998. So this will be 20 years that we've hunted literally the exact same zone, same area. And when I first started hunting it, it was like a wildlife refuge. I mean, just the best way to describe it is you could find elk anywhere. And we didn't have hot spots. We just literally went from ridge to ridge or drainage to drainage and knew we would be into elk. And obviously, you know, that's part of the equation to successful elk hunting, but it's not everything. I can remember talking back in the early 2000s how amazing this area is, that I couldn't wait for my kids to get old enough to learn to hunt and to grow up hunting here, because it was just, the opportunities were so rich. And, you know, from the very first, from in 1999, we actually called in wolves while we were hunting there and didn't see an effect. There were three black ones that came in. We didn't hear them howl. until I think about 2002, 2003, when we first started seeing just the effects of them. And that effect that I saw was the elk were full on screaming, a complete rut fest going on, and the wolves started howling, and the elk literally went quiet. We watched two bulls in a meadow with 18 cows drop their heads from bugling and fighting and go back to feeding and not talking. And realized that, man, they really mess up the elk. You know, they aren't as active when the wolves are howling at them. And over the next, I would say, 8 years, six or eight years, we really noticed elk numbers not being what they were. The elk that we would find were in the open high country shale stuff where they could see a lot better than down in the dark timber. The herds were a lot bigger, so we were, instead of seeing groups of 6 to 8 cows with a bull, we were seeing 4 and 5 bulls, you know, running around with 40 or 50 cows. And that was exciting when you could find them and get into them. So we didn't really notice a huge decrease in the actual quality of the hunt until I would say about 10 years ago. And it started to become harder to find elk. To find sign, trail cameras throughout the summer weren't picking up elk. We'd get into hunting season and we'd be in elk, but we couldn't get them to bugle. They're very cautious and wary coming in. So I think that was the biggest eye-opener for us was, man, there's not as many elk to hunt. The elk that we're getting into are harder to hunt. And all of this was pre-wolf hunting season. The first year they opened the wolf season here in Idaho, we didn't really notice much of an effect. And then again, it closed, I think, the next year or two. Well, it went back to court and was under appeals. And when it finally opened back up, I think we were so far behind the curve and the balance between predator and prey was so out of whack that, you know, it was tough hunting. And I think I would say in the last 3 years, things have started coming back, and that's not an optimistic, oh, it's as good as it was. I've just noticed, if I'm going to talk about the negative side of it, you know, I think I've noticed a positive side, an increase in the quality, not from where it was 20 years ago, but definitely from where it was 8 or 10 years ago. And hopefully, you know, that trend will continue.
So this growing wolf population, is that simply from reproduction or is that just more and more wolves moving in territorially from other locations?
Primarily reproduction. So they start, I don't remember how many pairs. There were a minimal amount of breeding pairs that were initially introduced into the area. And, you know, I don't, as far as I know, they haven't introduced more. It's just strictly from their prolific breeding status. And, you know, they have 6, 8, 10 pups per year in a litter, and it doesn't take long for a litter, for a pack to double in size. And once those pups, the males, get a couple years old, they go out and start roaming looking for their own pack, and territories expand and new packs move into new territories. And pretty soon, pretty much anywhere you have a sustainable or a trackable population of elk, there's a wolf pack in that area.
Teller, have you had any like firsthand experiences with wolves during hunting season specifically that you're seeing activity?
Yeah, I've, two different times while I was elk hunting, had dogs within one at 15 yards. Well, one at 5 yards, but I didn't see him skirt me. And it was the year before they actually opened the season. And yeah, we were there actually full draw on a wolf at 15 yards. And, or my buddy was, and just kind of like, it was the first time that I'd have had wolves come up on me while I was hunting. And it was definitely a kind of creepy thing, for sure. Just having them that close. And they came in, we were cow calling and just came into cow calls. And then the other time I was with my daughter and we were hunting and had a dog 100 yards away from us sitting there howling, which honestly, it was pretty dang awesome and an awesome experience for her.
That is amazing. I mean, it's one of these deals where, like, they're prey, and there's this idea out there that as hunters, or if we start talking about wolves, that we just flat out hate wolves and don't want any wolves, period. But I don't think that's the place that either of you guys are coming from, right?
It's a fine line, and it depends on the day, I think. You know, I think the reality is whether we hate them or love them or like them or don't like them, the reality is they're here. And that was something that I don't think any of us would have chosen to introduce into the elk population, but they're here. And so I think for now, or now the real chore for us is to figure out how to deal with them.
I've seen it come up so much with you guys sharing this story of this hunt, and obviously it's triggered a lot of debate online. And one of the questions that it keeps coming back to is, what's the difference between a wolf killing an elk versus hunters killing an elk? And I think really tied to that is this deeper question of maybe why are hunters better at managing, or should they have the right to manage wildlife like elk rather than predators? Walk us through that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think for me, and I'll jump back just a little bit. I've had several experiences with wolves during hunting season, during elk season, as well as outside of it. And several years ago, I had a bear bait that was set really close to a wolf den, which I didn't know at the time. But come to find out, every time a bear would hit the bear bait, at least one to three wolves would be there within about a minute and run the bears off. And I was sitting the bait one night, and a bear came in real cautious and turned and ran. And within 30 seconds, here came a big black wolf running down the hill. And I videoed it and just put a short little YouTube video out there talking about, I think it said, wolves running bear off bear bait or something. And, of course, YouTube is notorious for people hiding behind fake IDs and making all sorts of comments. But it opened this whole huge, heated, emotional discussion between those who love wolves and hate hunting and those who hate wolves and love hunting. And it turned into just this negative banter of threatening each other and calling each other names. And, you know, it wasn't solving anything. It was making hunters look bad. It was making anti-hunters look bad. And so as Tyler and I started down this path and went out the first couple of times, we didn't have a plan to document things or to turn it into an educational piece. But after the first couple times out, when we'd even just post a picture of the snowmobile with a rifle on it and say, heading out wolf hunting, I started getting quite a few negative comments on Instagram from people, you know, saying, I hope that your children get ran over by a lawnmower. Huh. I hope that, you know, a helicopter crashes into your house and your whole family dies in a fiery crash. And, you know, all the things that come from the anti-hunting crowd with their emotional response. And I thought, you know what, I'm not going to engage in a debate with them, but I'm going to start educating. And I want, you know, it's going to be, in my mind, it would be really hard for someone to argue with sound logic. And obviously there'll be people who, you know, have no common sense or logic, and they don't want to hear and they don't want to be educated. And I'm not
on either as side.
Concerned about them. Yeah, on either side. And I'm not as concerned about them. What I'm concerned about is the 90% of the population who doesn't hunt, but also doesn't have an opinion about it. And educating them, because they're the ones that, you know, eventually are going to be deciding laws and rules and dictating the direction of hunting, not only locally, but I think on a much bigger scale. And so I guess for me, the argument that we made through this and the facts that we tried to show was hunters are a much more efficient management tool for managing wildlife than nature or wildlife itself. And there are several, you know, scientific studies, and people will pull out certain things, both supporting and opposing hunting and especially predator populations. But at the bottom line of it is, wolves don't care about tomorrow. They truly don't. They don't have that foresight. They have an instinct to kill and to eat. And they don't care about tomorrow. They don't care about sustainable wildlife populations. They don't care about the fact that if they get overpopulated, half of them are going to die off from mange, and that's how nature takes care of their balance. They don't care about when they get, you know, killed off by mange. If there aren't hunters there, the prey population, the elk and the deer, will explode, and starvation will be how they're taken care of during the winter months. And, you know, they just, the humane side of it, hunting is a far more humane way of balancing all wildlife populations, both predator and prey, than nature is. And, you know, people say, well, nature is doing just fine until hunters showed up. It's not just hunters. It's all the aspects of human encroachment on wildlife. And that's, you know, encroachment and development. That's wildfires. That's logging. That's all of these things that we have taken an active role in managing as humans, managing the ecosystem, including wildlife and habitat. And we can't sit back and let nature manage one portion of it while we manage the rest of it. It just doesn't work. And you see those swings in predator-prey balance, that if there is no hunting, predator populations will grow. They'll eat themselves out of house and home. They'll catch disease and die off. As they die off, then the prey populations grow. They get up there until they're too high and can't sustain. Then they start, you know, into starvation because the ecosystem can't provide the sustainable habitat for them. And then predators come up. I mean, it's just this huge cycle. Well, you take that natural cycle and you throw in a forest fire, which eliminates habitat. And all of a sudden, animals are displaced and forced into even a smaller area. Or you take a really harsh winter when elk populations are at a low point due to predation. And it turns into a situation like we have up on the Locksaw-Selway Wilderness area up in Idaho, where back in the mid-90s, the predation from bears was so high on elk calves that they opened it up so that hunters could kill two bears per season to try to regulate that a little bit. Well, what happened is they introduced wolves at about the exact same time. Fires and everything that had been suppressed up there had created an overgrowth area so that there wasn't the habitat that elk needed. And then you had the winter, I think it was 96, 97 or 95, 96, where it was a late winter. It came after the elk had moved back up the mountain. They got trapped up there with no feed, and it lasted with cold temperatures. And the elk population literally was killed off to the point that with the predation the way it was, it hasn't recovered in almost 20 years. And that's what you see when hunting isn't allowed to manage the wildlife balance in a sustainable way, that, you know, we're looking out for not just tomorrow, but years to come, generations to come. We have a model that will allow wildlife to flourish within their ecosystems, within the habitat they have, and still provide hunting opportunities. You take hunters out of that mix and the balance is completely thrown from side to side. The cycles and the swings are huge, and we run into issues where potentially certain populations wouldn't be able to recover because of our involvement in other parts of the balance.
That's such a key point of in a debate like this. It's not just hunters versus anti-hunters, but actually the vast majority of the people, just the general public, and, you know, maybe in the future a voting populace that has a say in some of these issues. They're on neither side, really. They're not hunters. They're not, you know, outright anti-hunters, but I think there's just a lot of, you know, misinformed or uninformed public in the middle. And so it's key to understand that and to do what we can to raise, you know, a solid voice for hunting being conservation. Even I'm thinking of what you're just saying with hunting as a regulated means and natural prey is completely unregulated. I wonder how much of the general public, the non-hunting public, even really understands that hunting is regulated with specific goals in mind. Do you have any sort of thoughts or even feelings on where the general public is at on these issues?
Well, here in Idaho, the general public is like the majority is not. In fact, most people I know are anti-wolf. Like they're can't stand them, and they tend to be on the super opposite end of the spectrum as the other people. Until you really sit down and have the conversation with them, and try to get them to get past like their frustrations of this or that, I kind of realize that I haven't ran into very many people that are like kill all the wolves when you really start talking to them, and their knee jerk reaction is that. But yeah, I don't think the general public is 100% anti get rid of, and they're dang sure the general public around here is, I don't think we ever get anybody opposed to us hunting them in our area by any means.
Yeah, I mean, I just wonder about just the public at large. And I know, as you said, I mean, that's a huge, vague term, but I'm just, you know, I'm sensing that more and more in the future that it's going to be important for us as hunters to help educate people who don't understand hunting. And there's certain parts of the country, like where maybe the general public is more tied to hunting, but clearly there's vast portions of the country where people are just completely uninformed about what hunting is and how it can be a good model for actually securing the future of wildlife.
Yeah, totally. And that's kind of a big thing that you run into. I mean, for predator or prey, I think, is if you're uneducated about it, then you fight against it. And the more that hunters can try to educate people on this is why, and you really like to see these animals in the mountains, you like to see this, well, no one else, especially wolves, there's nothing else hunting a wolf at all. So it's like, okay, if you really like your wolf, like Corey touched on, overpopulation of wolves, well, they will die off and they won't be there for you to see and to enjoy. So I think that's a huge thing, is educating on, not convincing them to like hunting, but convincing them that the management that it creates is super important.
And I think, you know, you get into those who, you know, especially those who don't like hunting. In their minds, hunting is bad. Hunters are rednecks who are out there trying to kill everything that moves. Hunters are given free will over stewardship on the land, and all they want to do is wipe it out, that they're just like a pack of wolves that don't care about tomorrow. And there are some like that. There absolutely are. And I mean, as a hunter myself, you know, those individuals upset me, because I know the light that they paint to those who are going to ultimately make the decisions in this country, and it's not going to be the group of hunters. We have to do our job in educating people about why hunting is important. And yes, there are a million things that I can give about why I love to hunt and why I should be allowed to hunt. But I think scientifically, we have to explain to people that hunting is important, that hunting is conservation, that we don't want to wipe out the animals, that we don't go out there with the intent of just shooting up the hillside and collecting the carnage at the end of the day, that we're out there as stewards of the land with a true intent to take that responsibility seriously and do our best to keep that balance there that hunting is designed to do. And all the other reasons, the love for the outdoors, the passion for the animals, the organic food that comes from it, the physical conditioning that's a part of it, all of these things that we give as reasons why we love to hunt are personal fuel to go out and do that. But at the end of the day, hunting is management and hunting is conservation. And that is the message, I think, that is so important to convey, especially to those who sometimes see the negative side of hunting and those, the very small minority of hunters who cast that light.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about the hunt a little bit. Tyler, you just mentioned a second ago that wolves, they don't have a predator after them. They are the predator. And hunting, even us hunting wolves, can be incredibly difficult. I mean, what do you just kind of begin to lay out what all you guys went through with the hunt? We can, you know, get deeper into it as we go, but just tell us about why it's so stinking difficult to even catch up with these wolves.
You know, honestly, I was telling Corey this on the mountain, when we were sitting there over an elk kill waiting for some wolves to show up. And I told him, I was like, you know what? I didn't really care about start hunting wolves until probably 4 years ago, maybe. I don't remember what I'd said, 4 or 5 years ago. Before that, I just kind of complained about them. And I started happening on a little more wolf kills, and it got a little more personal. Like, holy cow, these things, they're doing what they do, but they're really affecting, especially bulls, you know, in the winter where they're kind of stuck in deep snow. They're stuck back in there. And I'm like, man, they're really affecting it. So I actually had a guy tell me, you know, well, don't complain about them unless you're going to do something about it. So I think so many hunters sit there and complain about, oh, the wolves, and but they don't go out and do their part or take part in managing or trying to help managing. And that in itself it's tough. I mean, we all know guys that have hunted wolves, and there's some guys that have definitely killed a bunch of wolves and they've got it dialed, but to me and Corey, it was every day was like a learning experience on from how much country they travel. I mean, it's just blew my mind. You see tracks here, and then 2 hours later, you glass them up on a whole other side of a drainage and 3 foot of snow, and they're just cruising through it like nothing. I mean, they were super impressive to me how tough and resilient they are moving around in that country. And it's not just, well, I'm going to go drive around and find one on the side of a hill and shoot it. I mean, it is by far the hardest animal that I've ever tried to hunt and kill. I mean, I still didn't kill one. I tried to kill one, but that didn't quite work out. but yeah, it was an eye opener to see why there's so many wolves and why the population maybe did get crazy, because they're not just easy to shoot. In fact, I think in the last study that I looked at, there was 256 wolf mortalities by hunters in the state of Idaho. And I'm like, how many guys are out there going and they only get killed 256 wolves? I mean, that's like that's the worst hunting statistic out of all game, I think.
Yeah, and what I think they sold, if I remember right, 40 or 50,000 wolf tags the first year that it opened. And there were, you know, 90 shot or something like that. So yeah, like Tyler said, wow. It's not, if you're looking for a hunt where your odds are in your favor, wolf hunting's at the very bottom of that list.
And here, guys, is guesstimate, how much, like, were you hunting the same pack the entire time? And if you were, how much country do you think they were, you know, kind of covering on a daily basis?
Yeah, we hunted the same pack. In fact, we went out the first day on snowmobile and just said, let's make a huge loop through this area. And I don't remember, Tyler, was it 30 miles, 40 miles we did on the snowmobiles that day?
Yeah.
And we cut tracks, and they were a day or two old. We cut tracks probably within 5 miles of unloading the sleds. And we did the full loop, never crossed any more tracks, no more elk tracks, no more wolf tracks or anything. So we knew kind of the general area they were in. And then the very next day that we went out, we got eyes on 7 wolves. And like Tyler mentioned earlier, you know, we're high five and like, we're going to get a wolf today. Yeah, you know, we see him, it's game over. We're rifle hunting, you know, we're bow hunters. So we don't even have to get close to him today. We just have to be able to see him and boom, it's over. And we strapped on snowshoes and took off with high spirits for about the first hour and a half. And after we'd gone about a mile in an hour and a half in 3 feet of snow with snowshoes on, and realized the wolves were probably 6 miles away from where we had last seen them already, we knew that mobility was going to be our biggest challenge in hunting them, because they are so mobile. With that being said, we did hunt the same pack the entire time. We just kind of narrowed down and kind of tried to figure out where they were going. We knew they had to be eating, so we were trying to find a fresh kill, knowing that they'd be coming back into that regularly. And in that, I don't know that they ever left that drainage from where we found their tracks to where we basically followed them back and forth. It's probably, as a crow flies, 6 miles, 7 miles through that drainage. And obviously, there's a lot of side drainages in there. But they made that circuit, I wouldn't say daily, but frequently, and they didn't travel the same place. It was just catch them in one corner here one day, next day they're up in this corner, but they stayed in that same, I don't know, 20 to 25 square mile area the entire time we were hunting them.
Tyler, talk about you guys. It's just numerous bulls, unfortunately, that you came upon that were wolf killed through that. Talk about, you know, the encounters that you had with that and kind of what that experience is like.
You know, the first one we came across, the antler hunter, the horn hunter and me was like, ah, sweet, a deadhead. You know, my first thing is like a deadhead. You know, we all always love to find deadheads as a horn hunter. And
and what Tyler's referring to is a shed hunter, not a trophy hunter for elk, shed hunting.
Shed antler hunting, you know, and then I kind of was like, oh man, this is a dang wolf kill. And it's kind of like, oh, that's a bummer. I can't believe this. You know, it's one less, like Corey said, that's one less bugle we're in here, because it's all the same country that Corey and I spent some time in. And it's like, well, there's one less bugle we're going to hear. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like bull number two. well, there's two less bugles we're going to hear. And then bull number three. And it just, as I came across these bulls, I was, I honestly, there was a couple times, like I felt my heart kind of start pounding. And, then we found the last bull. He's a good, and every one of these bulls were like entering the, or in the prime of their life, like breeding bulls that are strong, you know, not, and not old and weak and sick, you know, they're strong bulls. And to find, and we found those four bulls in maybe half a mile to a mile, maybe, all dead. And so it just, it makes me wonder how many more are maybe up on the side in the tucked in the trees that we don't, that we weren't able to find. And yeah, then I look at
all
that.
Of these, go ahead. All those bulls were found in the road. You know, they're just old logging roads, but we found them while riding snowmobiles on logging roads. You know, it's not like we were getting up and hiking ridges and looking for them specifically. They were just laying right out in the open within our path.
Hmm. And one of them in the river, you know, and it's just, it was, it, it became kind of sickening to me that, man, there's four less bugles and there's four less, you know, bulls that are going to be breeding these cows. And then of course you've still got the comments of, well, why do you have the right to kill them and the wolves don't? And I mean, that's a whole another side topic of, well, we can manage elk. We, you know, we know how many elk we can kill in an area, but the wolves don't, like Corey touched on. But it did. It got kind of like that last bull. I literally was just like, it was like Corey and I were just kind of quiet. I mean, it was no longer like high five and like, oh, look at this great bull, this dead bull we found. Look at these antlers. It was kind of a somber. It became more somber and somber every bull we found.
Does that firsthand experience for you, Corey, change the way you see the wolf hunt?
I don't know that I would say it changes it. I think it intensifies my desire to be actively involved in managing the wolves, to see the carnage that they can do. And there's so many things, you know, that was one of the questions or arguments that was brought up is, you know, you guys killed four elk in a week during elk season. Why are you upset that the wolves killed four elk? And I think, you know, there's several reasons. There's competition side. You know, we're a hunter. They're a hunter. They're in our area hunting our elk. You know, there's that side. But I think that's an emotional response. I think at the root of it, we hunt elk during a different time of year. If we were given a rifle to go out there during the month of January or February and shoot bull elk, we could wipe out elk. Wolves don't have a season. They hunt year round. And those bulls they're concentrated together in groups of bulls right now. The demographics has changed drastically from when we hunt them in September. All the bulls are together. They're up at higher elevations in deeper snow, which makes them just prime targets for the wolves. The wolves aren't out chasing the cows and the calves out on the flats where they come down and get fed in the winter. They're up in the mountains where the bulls stay, killing mature, healthy elk. And another argument, you know, people have said, well, you know, the bulls are wore out. They're run down from rutting and they're out of energy and they're an easy target. The wolves are still only killing the sick and the weak. And that's complete nonsense. You know, right now, this winter has not been a tough winter. It's been one of the easiest winters the elk have had in a long time. And yes, there was 3 feet of powder for, you know, a week while we were hunting, but elk can move through that just fine. It's when it gets the frozen, crusted over 4 or 5 feet of snow, that's when the elk get in trouble. They can't find food. They expend a lot of energy. The elk were healthy this year. The elk were not run down from the rut. The bulls had already recovered and were doing as well as any of the elk. These weren't old bulls that had bred for the last 10 years and were past their prime and needed taken out. These were 4 to 6 year old elk that are the prime breeding animals within the ecosystem that they live in. And to see that gone and to know that, hey, there's 100 cows out on the flat with the bull to cow ratio is already low and beat up from the wolves over the last 15 or 20 years, we probably only have 12 to 14 mature bulls per those 100 cows in this area. And we've just found four of them laying within a half mile of each other. That's a percentage. That's a big percentage. It's not just a negligible, well, the wolves can have 10% here. It's those kind of numbers are hard to recover from.
Man, I didn't even realize as well that those were just ones that you guys quite literally stumbled upon, like in the road. You weren't even, it wasn't when you were out hiking or, you know, in the deep stuff per se. That's wild. So let's talk a bit more about the hunt. We talked about the challenges and the ground that they cover. What advice, kind of what lessons learned either from this hunt or previous hunts would you have for someone who wants to get out and be active and participate in a wolf hunt? And maybe what are some of the things that stood out and helped you finally connect with this one, with this hunt?
For me, you know, there were a lot of things learned about hunting. I think as an elk hunter, I'm still learning that game. As a wolf hunter, I'm brand new. So, you know, I was able to literally step into it. And I've been out, I've been around wolves, I've had encounters, but to actually come up with a strategy to hunt them and to realize how incredibly difficult it is, it was eye-opening. You know, we went out with calls thinking we were going to be able to howl, because I've howled at wolves before and got them to answer. And I thought, we're going to go out and howl, they'll answer from 2 miles away, we'll locate them, we'll move in, we'll howl, they'll think there's another pack in there, and they're going to come in and want to fight us. Kind of the elk hunting mentality of locating with location bugle and then move in with challenge bugle. And that just didn't work. So what we found was we didn't hear a single wolf howl in 7 days of elk hunting. And I guarantee that there were wolves that heard us howling at them. They weren't responding to our howls. Just to go out and spot and stalk wolves with even a long range rifle would be incredibly difficult, especially in this area we were hunting. We're in it's, you know, timbered area. There's some open ridges that have been logged, or, you know, clearings down in the creek bottom, some meadows. But for the most part, we're trying to pick out, you know, a big game animal in a 6-foot opening between pine trees type of a thing. So it's not conducive for just sitting and glassing and finding them at long distance and then moving in. So basically what we were doing was trying to find fresh tracks, find the area that they were actively hunting in that day, and then get up and glass or be mobile enough that we can glass several different draws within that drainage. And it was tough. It wasn't working. We realized that this is not an effective method to hunt these wolves in this area. And as we started finding more and more elk kills, they were all, I would say, within 4 weeks. They had all been killed within the last 4 weeks. So what we were looking for was a fresh kill, a fresh elk that the wolves had killed that we could go and sit and just basically wait for the wolves to come back, knowing that they would be coming back to pick that elk clean. And when we finally found that big 6x7, they had drug it in the river and they were having a hard time. There was a log there that it was hung up on so that you could see. I mean, they'd beat a trail in the ice on that log going out and trying to pick meat off of the carcass in the river. So we knew they were coming back and probably had a little bit more longevity on that feeding site for the wolves. So fortunately, we were able to find a ridge that was 400 yards above it and provided a really good perch to be able to sit and just wait with some vantage points to be able to see them as they came in. And so that ended up being our ultimate play, was finding a fresh kill that we could just basically sit and watch on. With that being said, there's no doubt that trapping is the more efficient way to go. If you have a pack of wolves and you can find a kill and set traps around that kill, that's going to be far more efficient than sitting and waiting and hoping that that very mobile pack of wolves is going to come back in while you're sitting there. So for next, you know, our next plan, I think for going forward, we're going to get our trapping license. We're going to learn how to trap wolves, which is a whole nother level of learning and education. We're going to probably spend most of our time looking for fresh wolf kills and then spend our time either setting up traps or hunting around that. Another thing I think that we're going to implement is hunting earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. Most of these elk that we found had been killed during the month of February. So to help, you know, conserve some of the elk and see that some of them don't get killed, start hunting in December and January before the wolves really start taking their toll on the bulls.
How is trapping regulated differently than hunting in terms of like limits and things like that?
Corey, I don't know if you know, but I don't know. I know you can trap more than you can shoot, right?
I think it used to be that way. I don't know that it is. I think you can get up to 5 tags. And I'm actually just bouncing out to the Fish and Game website while we're sitting here talking to see if there's anything there about that. But I know that in the past you could trap a lot more than you could shoot. I think you could shoot 2 and trap 5, and that may still actually be the...
You know, it was interesting, guys, that when Corey and I kind of started doing this and just documenting our day-to-day, just our story, and how many people started, like, instant messaging me, instant messaging Corey, giving us all sorts of ideas. And I know with me, and I think Corey, the one that stood out the most, there's a guy from Montana, and that guy has killed a lot of wolves. He's got a pretty good, he's been educated. He already went through the educating period instead of, you know, by trial and error. He's kind of got it figured out now. But I was talking to his acquaintance, and he said, you know what? He goes, rifle hunting is so inefficient. Like, to really put a dent in a wolf population and to try to boost our elk numbers, it's like, you have got to trap. You know, they're like, how many days have you and Corey been hunting? I was like, 8. He's like, and you got one wolf. He said, that's not real good odds. You know, they're stacked against you highly. He said, you guys, if you really want to help, you got to trap.
I mean, I could see, obviously, hunting, you have to be there in that place and in that time and catch that moment and make the shot. And there's so much that goes into that. Whereas trapping is, you know, there's still, obviously, you have to be in the right place, but it at least the time factor is a bit different with trapping.
Totally. Yeah. We've got limited hours to be there and limited attention spans. I mean, the day that I shot the wolf that we ended up getting, I think we sat there for 6 hours, and after about 30 minutes, we're both looking at each other like, how long are we going to sit here? You know, this is like whitetail hunting out of a tree stand. This is not how we're used to hunting. We just want to go and cover country. But knowing that that's completely inefficient, you know, we had to stick it out, and it worked out that time. Whereas trapping, you put the trap out and it's working for you 24 hours. So efficiency wise, it's far more efficient. And then just to follow up from the regulations here, hunters may buy up to 5 gray wolf hunting tags per calendar year. Certified wolf trappers may buy up to 5 gray wolf trapping tags. So there's trapping tags and hunting tags. So you can get 5 of each. In addition to trapping tags, certified trappers may use wolf hunting tags in zones in which both the hunting and trapping seasons are open at the same time. Wolf trapping tags may also be used for wolves that are hunted in a zone in which both hunting and trapping seasons are open at the same time. A person possessing a valid trapping license with a wolf trapper education course validation may use a valid wolf hunting tag on a trapped wolf. So it sounds like you can buy 5 hunting tags and 5 trapping tags and use them interchangeably. So potentially you could put a tag on 10 wolves in a season.
Wow. Okay.
That'd be a good dent. Yeah.
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 Have you looked much at what the certification process looks like? Is that a hands-on class, like a one-day class? What does that look like to get certified for trapping?
Oh, yeah, I believe the guys that I talked to is a one-day class to go get like their trapping certification.
Well, this is interesting. You know, such an interesting topic that people are all over the map with. And I think you guys have done a good job in showing the experience and just providing some level-headed commentary, if you will, if nothing else. As you guys know, things quickly degrade on social media. And it's rare that I think there can be some helpful discussion. And I saw some of that come out of what you guys were doing. Obviously, there was people being much more inflammatory, but I just kind of want to extend that into this show just to provide that insight that you guys have, because it's easy to be like myself and to sit here and armchair quarterback this thing, and it's different to get out there and do it and see it and experience it. Before we wrap up, I would just like to hear maybe something from each of you, Corey and Tyler, that you would just want the listeners to know about wolf hunting, elk conservation, and how those dynamics play together. Anything that we haven't covered that you'd want to put out there?
You know, I think for me, the bottom line is hunting is conservation. And whether it's wolves or elk or any other animal, hunters play a very valuable part in managing those wildlife populations so that they're here for the future in a sustainable manner, not just, you know, oh, we're going to keep the very minimums here. We want, you know, a healthy population of wolves is going to allow us to have a healthy population of elk. And if either of those numbers get out of balance, it's going to have an effect on the other, and it's going to have an effect on hunters. But hunters can, through management and through scientific data and monitoring, keep a balance that is sustainable year after year. And at the end of the day, no one cares more about wildlife than hunters. And that can be argued 1,000 different directions. No one will ever be able to convince me that there's anybody that cares more about wildlife than hunters. And the reason is no one else is willing to stand up and put money into that management conservation. Hunters definitely contribute far more money than any other group, and I think probably the combination of all other groups, to the management and conservation of wildlife through the fees that we pay for licenses, through taxes on hunting equipment and all of that. That money goes back into ensuring that there is a sustainable population of wildlife for years to come. Yes, it's definitely, I can see how people would say it's contradictory to say that hunters care about wildlife and that killing animals is somehow conserving animals. But when you look at it from the standpoint of the cycles of nature and how things can get vastly out of balance and then not recover because of all the other things that go into wildlife management, the habitat and all of that, hunters are there to conserve wildlife. And I want my children to be able to hunt for all the reasons that I love hunting. And because of that, I'm willing to engage in and enter into the management of wildlife to ensure that hunting is around and that wildlife is around for everyone to enjoy, for non-hunters, for hunters, for anti-hunters. Everyone can enjoy wildlife because of the efforts of hunters. And that can't be argued to the negative because of the facts that stand behind it. And so I think, you know, for me, I want to preserve that healthy population of elk to ensure that there's always going to be elk. And I hunt elk to do that. But because I hunt elk, I also feel a responsibility to be involved in the management of the predator populations, including wolves.
Well said.
Yeah, that was a really good answer, Corey.
Yeah, go ahead and follow that up, Tyler. Please. Please enlighten us.
I'm going to go wolf hunting and stuff. No, you know, it's funny. Corey nailed everything that I could possibly say and way more eloquent probably. But, you know, I think there was 256 in 2015. I believe there was 256 wolves killed by hunter trapper harvest. And out of all the wolves in the state, I mean, there's nothing else managing wolves. Like we can help manage elk numbers by more tags, more this, and it works. Or closing areas off or turning things into draw. That's not the case with wolves. Nothing, there's no predator hunting a wolf. And so without hunters, you know, going in and doing their part in managing these wolves, they can get out of control. And then, you know, the elk numbers, the deer number, all these numbers start falling off if they get out of control. So my big takeaway from this whole wolf hunting experience was to definitely do my part in doing that, because if we don't, as we've seen by following elk numbers in different areas of the state, you know, it'll fall in my backyard, and that's where I take my kids and where I want them, as Corey said, my kids to experience all the things I have. And does that mean an occasional wolf howl in the background? Absolutely. I think that was one of the coolest noises I've heard in the woods, for sure. So I'm all for a healthy population of wolves, but that will also make a healthy population of, you know, other big game.
Perfect. Well, fellas, thank you so much for joining us on this one. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having you guys.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks, we're grateful to have a platform to be able to hopefully educate you know, even hunters and non-hunters alike, so that, you know, I think we owe it to those who don't hunt to explain ourselves in a manner that doesn't maybe turn them off or turn them away from hunting, and can hopefully help them see the benefit and the real reasons why we hunt.
Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in. There are obviously a lot of opinions on this topic, and it can be debated for days and weeks and months and years. My personal hope is that we all learn to see that hunting is a valuable conservation tool, and that hunters truly do love and are for wildlife and managing wildlife effectively. As always, guys, thank you so much for following along. You can subscribe to this show in iTunes or Stitcher or many other podcast directories. You can always get all of the shows directly at exomountaingear.com/podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us directly to podcast@exomountaingear.com. If you're enjoying the show, we would love to see a review in iTunes. We will catch you guys next week with a new show. Thank you for tuning back in.